From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The latest production of the Plan B Theater Company is about a 12th century German nun. Now, you may not have heard of Hildegard, but if you lived in the 12th century, you probably did, because by all accounts, Hildegard was amazing. She wrote books about medicine and midwifery. She was a mathematician. She composed music, and she had visions, vivid, intricate visions about faith and devotion. And something happened to Hildegard when she reached her 40s. Her visions changed dramatically. And some historians believe they changed because Hildegard fell in love with another woman. Tim Slover's play is about the personal and theological questions in Hildegard's life, how she reconciled her love of a woman with her love of God. The play is called Virtue. It's just opened. We're talking about it today after the news.
Support for Radio West comes from thousands of sustainers, listeners just like you who give ongoing monthly donations to help pay for the public radio shows they rely on. Show your love for Radio West by becoming a sustainer, starting at just $5 a month at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Hildegard of Bingen was the leader of an abbey of Benedictine sisters in 12th century Europe. And she was something of a celebrity of the time. She wrote books, she composed music, and she had these dramatic and striking visions about God. At first, the visions were static and conservative. Pope loved them. But as Hildegard approached middle age, her visions changed, started to open up and take in a larger sense of God's love. Now, this is conjecture, but some historians think Hildegard's visions changed because she had fallen in love with another woman, a young aristocratic woman named Richardis, who came to the monastery where she was. The playwright Tim Slover was interested in Hildegard's story and the questions that she may have asked herself about love and sin and revelation. He was also really fascinated by her music. And so he's written a play about Hildegard, which has just opened at the Plan B Theater Company. It's called Virtue, and today in the program, we're talking about it. Tim Slover is with us. He's a playwright and writer. His plays have been produced off-Broadway and in regional theaters in the United States, in Canada, in Britain. He heads the playwriting program here at the University of Utah, and he's joining us in the studio. And Tim Slover, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Jerry Rapier is back with us in his 17th season as Plan B Theater Company's artistic director. He's directing the production of Virtue, and welcome back to you.
Glad to be here.
Christy Summerhays is an actor and director. She plays Hildegard of Bingen in the production, and she's joining us here as well. Welcome to you.
Thanks, Doug.
So, Tim Slover, I'm trying to figure out where it is. What did you hear about Hildegard of Bingen?
Music. It was her music.
It was music.
Yeah, that's how it started for me. There's a remarkable number, actually, of really good CDs about her music, including the famous pure-voiced soprano Emma Kirkby, who I kind of have a crush on anyway. And she did an album called The Feather on the Breath of God with the Gothic singers. And I just couldn't believe this music. I'd always been a fan of early music, chant and all of that. This is entirely different, and yet written at the same time. And I just wanted to know about this life.
Wait, so all you knew at the time about Hildegard was music, not this crazy, fascinating story about her possibly being in love with a woman?
True.
Is that right?
Yeah. It was the music, but there's something in that music that suggests that there's some personal life written into it.
Oh, really? So you kind of sensed it in some way?
I don't know if I sensed it.
Yeah.
I just knew that it was dramatic in a way that, you know, Ambrosian chant or Gregorian chant wasn't. But again, it's written in the 12th century. So it's even early by chant sort of standards. But it's like whale song, some of it. And there's got to be something going on there, I thought. And I just collected more music.
When did you start writing some kind of play?
I started writing some kind of play in 2009.
Wow.
Because Penn State University's MFA acting program was looking for a new play to work for their students to work on. And they just had Julie Jensen there, and that had been a success for them, which is not surprising. So they wanted another guy, sort of from the same area.
Yeah.
And I just thought by that time I had read about her and realized there was a story there. But that's when it started.
What about her story interests you? now, as you sort of know the layout of her life, as you sense something going on in her music, what's the story here, do you figure?
It's the story of a woman that turns out to be quite earthy mm-hmm. and quite uppity and quite faithful all at the same time.
Yeah.
And for me now, it's Christy.
Right.
And that monastery is created by Jerry, because a theatrical text only exists on the stage, right? And so now I'm completely absorbed in all of that. So what had been abstract for me for years, really, has now become wonderfully concrete.
Christy, I was going to actually wait to have you talk about the character, but jump in. She's funny, Hildegard. Mm-hmm. She's really independent. Did you say uppity?
I said uppity.
That's kind of right, isn't it? I mean, she's
uppity.
Super confident, right? Self-assured. And then that breaks down a bit in the play. We'll talk about that. But talk about how you're thinking about Hildegard.
Well, she is. I mean, Tim's written her this way, and gratefully as an actor, you know, you're so happy for that. But she is multidimensional. And I think that she's a figure that has a strong personality, you know, somebody who's a leader, a natural leader. But I really like her vulnerabilities and her questioning. And that I think the thing that makes her so powerful is her ability to analyze and look at a situation and look up and down, and you know, especially in a very, you know, structured environment. You know, her counterpart Volmar, you know, loves to come, you know, figure out the rules, and she is much more willing to, you know, open things up and look at things from different angles and feel and come at it from an intuitive place. But she's also not unintelligent, and she's very thoughtful. So that's a real human being.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, right.
I mean, really, that's all of us.
Right.
You know, whether if we come across as being shy, we have a bold side to us. If we come across as being bold, we have a shy, insecure side to us. And Hildegard is that way as well.
Yeah. Jerry Rapier, what do you think this play's about?
Well, it's interesting. My view of that has evolved from the time that I asked him if we could produce the play until now. I think the first thing that really excited me about the play is how personal it makes the historical. So it becomes very contemporary in a very accessible but still heightened way. But honestly, the power that Hildegard exhibits in trusting herself and understanding that she is her own best judge of her own faith mm-hmm. and the limits of that strikes a very different chord in the early months of 2017. It has taken on a different context, which is just again speaks to how the play is universal.
Wait, what do you mean? What do you mean?
Well, I can see Hildegard very easily organizing a women's march mm-hmm. if she lived now. I mean, she just fits right into our landscape of what it means to I'm surrounded by these women who are unabashedly claiming their power, which is a thing that shouldn't even have to happen. And looking back at someone who could do this in the 12th century, she has the ear of the Pope. She can boss the abbot around. Yeah. She can decide completely how she navigates her own faith inside the Catholic Church, which seems not the most navigable place for women, even now.
And that's pretty why the remarkable. Play is, it's all been costumed in pantsuits. It's really something.
Yeah, I was wondering about that choice. Okay, wait. All right. Let's talk about who she was. Tim Slover, she is really amazing. She is also seen as this vessel of God. So talk about who she was and where does she come from?
Mm-hmm. She was the 10th of 10 children, born in 1098, and was offered as a tithe by her parents at the age of 7 or 8 to the monastery of St. Disibod, who was a Celtic saint. And then she's enclosed, which means that she literally lived in a little cell with an older woman who took charge of her at the back of a the nave of a church.
The dour, joyless woman.
Very dour.
Yeah.
And eventually, and no one quite knows exactly why or how it happened, but after that dour woman, whose name is Jutta, died, somehow Hildegard got sprung, and you have to think she did it herself. Meanwhile, from the time she was 3 years old, she had had visions. And in her hagiographical biography, they say that at 5, she had a vision of a calf inside a cow. And when it was born, it was the color that she said it was going to be. So that may have been one reason why her parents decided to offload her onto a monastery. I'm not really sure. But she keeps these visions inside of her for years, decades, until, as you point out, in her late 30s, early 40s, she gets increasingly ill, and she just hears a voice telling her, "Oh, fragile one, say what you're hearing and seeing." And finally, kind of with the encouragement of a cleric, the one that Christy referenced, Volmar, she admits that she's having these visions. For her, she calls it the living light that comes to her and shows her things. And now she's going to start reporting them. She's going to start having them written down. The trouble is her Latin was quite rudimentary. And she was, as she said, all through her life, unlearned. Now, she died at 81, which is a ripe old age for that era.
Was,
so I don't know how unlearned she was by 81. But nevertheless, that was something she kept saying. And that was so that she could let everybody know that this was coming to her directly from God. Everything was coming to her. It was nothing that she was a scholar about. So Volmar, there's a lot of conjecture about what role he played in the finished forms of these visions. But as she kept doing that, suddenly, as you pointed out, things began to change. She began to have stranger visions in some ways, and they began to be more mobile, actually, not static. And eventually, in a burst that must have surprised her a lot, along with everybody else, she started singing. The visions became songs.
And this is an element we should talk about in the play. And maybe, Jerry, you can say something about this, because, of course, music is crucial to the play. It's not a musical per se, but it's really, really critical.
The Ogden Standard Examiner says it is.
Really?
Yeah, they report it as Virtue the Musical. That's the title in the Standard Examiner.
Those so we folks will be very disappointed.
Yes, they will.
There are a few passages in the play, 3 or 4 times, where we hear singing, and it's a very different style of singing than what we're used to or what we associate with olden times, I guess. And there's a particular style that is introduced to Hildegard through Richardus.
Explain who Richardus is.
Richardus is a penitent who comes to St. Disibod, and at the time that Hildegard begins to sing her visions. And Richardus has a skill that Volmar does not have, that she can take musical notation.
And so
she becomes the person who shares this holy work with Hildegard, much to her chagrin, because her goal to be at St. Disibod is to not be engaged with others, but to
Richardus wants to be alone.
She wants to be alone. But anyway, the music is, we just get a taste of it. We get a sense of its impact and how different it was. Really, I think the more I get involved in the world of the play, the line that really stands out to me about these visions is that collectively they're known as the Play of the Virtues, or Ordo Virtutum, which she's receiving a drama, which was heretical at the time.
She's receiving an opera, basically, right? I mean, she says God is reaching down to us in a whole new way. I don't understand what or why, what it means or why, but he's singing a story. So was this like the first opera?
It was.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what you call opera, but it predates Monteverdi by a long shot.
Right.
And it is certainly sung through. And it certainly has, leader, as it were, and motifs that run through it. So yeah, I think it's the first. I think it's the first opera. I don't know why the Met hasn't done it myself. it's also the first morality play. You know, it predates Everyman by a few hundred years too, where a morality play where certain characteristics are personified as characters. The virtues are personified. Wow. They're shining women in gowns.
So a woman wrote the first morality play.
Yep.
If the men get all the credit.
And yeah. It's populated by women, which is
This is the 12th century.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask, it seems like it's not a, it would be strange to call it a feminist sort of play, but the fact that Hildegard does take into account these women, that does seem striking for its time, doesn't it? Or was it?
It is striking, the way that she talks about them. Because you could just as easily have personified virtues like courage, chastity, charity as male figures, but she doesn't. There are male figures in Ordo Virtutum. They're the ones that are sort of named already in the Bible. They're the prophets. They're there. Mm-hmm. But she could easily have gone either way and chose to go the way that she did. Well, I'm speaking out of turn. It was given to her that way.
Yeah.
That's how she saw it.
That's Tim Slover, who wrote the play Virtue. Jerry Rapier directs the production for Plan B Theater Company. And Christy Summerhays plays Hildegard of Bingen. The play opened last night. It runs through the 26th. We should say it's sold out, but there are still chances for tickets. A prepaid waiting list opens 1 hour before each performance at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. This Sunday evening at 7 o'clock at St. Mark's Cathedral in Salt Lake City, they're going to be holding a service focused on the music and life of Hildegard of Bingen. You can get details about that on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're profiling the latest production from the Plan B Theater Company. It's the story of a 12th century nun, an abbess, actually, Hildegard of Bingen, who was a healer and a composer. She wrote books. She had these powerful visions about God, and she may have fallen in love with another woman. Utah playwright Tim Slover has written a play called Virtue about Hildegard. It's about trying to find that balance between spirituality and the gift of love. Tim Slover joins us on the program today, along with Christy Summerhays, who plays Hildegard of Bingen in the play. And we're also joined by Jerry Rapier, who directs the production. Tim Slover, what do you make of the conjecture that some have made that she and Richardus were lovers? This is one thing you've talked about, is that this part of the story, you want to create what you've called a bridge between these different communities. So I wanted to get you to talk a little bit about that, this idea that there is a woman in love, potentially a lesbian, who has a lover who's also devout and connected to God, that those aren't necessarily contradictions or don't have to be anyway, although this you work through this. Would you say something about that?
I don't think they have to be contradictions.
Right.
I also think that anyone can relate to this. If you have very fixed, fervently held spiritual views, and then suddenly in your life, you find yourself in a contradictory position. And you know darn well that you now have to come up with a new set of ideas about how to live. Maybe it's a family member who is different than you thought the family member was in some way or another. It isn't just about sexuality. Oh, in this case, it is.
Yeah.
It's the situation of finding yourself in your personal life, in what you're actually living, to be at odds with what you've always supposed, simply because you've never entered that part of life yet. I think that that's what happens to Hildegard. And I also think that what often happens is that either the religious community that you're in or the spiritual way that you're following, you feel like, oh, I can't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to drop out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Or perhaps the community itself rejects you. Or once you've gone over and decided that this part of your life that's so vital, the spiritual part, is now not for you, you find yourself terribly depressed. And because no one has said to you, oh, you know what? You actually can do both. I know that it's going to be hard for you to go to a handbook of instructions and discover exactly where you fit, you know, in it, but you actually can do both. And if there can be more conversations among those groups, the secular and the spiritual groups, then I just think that there is a more of a possibility for joy all the way through on both sides. There's a concept that Hildegard comes back to again and again and again, and the Latin word is viriditas, which just means greenness. Mm-hmm. You know, the Rhine Valley where she lived apparently is very green. I don't think I've ever been there. Maybe when I was 7. But apparently it's just, if I may use this word, fecund beyond belief. Yeah. And this gets into her teachings, and greenness becomes for her spiritual health, a physical health, a balance of body and spirit, a rejection of the Augustinian idea that the body is bad and only the spirit is good. She sort of rejects that whole idea and instead starts talking very much about God entering into you, making you fertile in some way, even if you're a religious recluse and don't lead a sexual life. Somehow all of that is still in you. And in fact, to her, the devil is characterized by two things, dryness, aridity, and the second thing, I guess that was two things, the third thing, no music. In Ordo Virtutum, the one character that can't sing is the devil. Mm. So music is also part of this viriditas. She says it's the sound that animates the cosmos is music, and it's in all of us, whether we can sing or not. And I can't, so I'm glad that it's still in me.
Jerry, I want you to set up a scene for us. This is the moment where she is talking with Richardis, Hildegard is, about expanding her sense of religion, not having this cramped view of religion. I think it gets at what Tim was really talking about. And we should also point out that at this moment, Richardis feels like she has a sin. Because she is attracted to women, she feels this is the secret sin. It's the reason she's come to the monastery. She wants to be alone. She wants to mortify her flesh, purge herself of this sin. Do you want to say something about this moment?
Sure. I think the key thing here is that Richardis is she's a lady. She is from a privileged background, and she has come to be her hope is to be an anchorite in St. Disibod, meaning she is closed up in a cell like Hildegard has been. No one knows why she's there. It's actually kind of a mystery to everyone why this person of privilege has come to St. Disibod. Hildegard certainly doesn't know what it is she's carrying, but it's clear that her work is to help her unburden herself. And that's where we catch them in this scene.
I am trying to do penance, to lose my sin.
Well, actually, it's my job to choose your penance, and I've decided it's going to start with eating. Take it, please. I won't ask you to try the honey. Everyone knows that's the first step to hell. Thank you. When the light returns, I cannot have you too weak to write.
That is Brother Volmar's task.
He has not the skill for this. And besides, dear daughter, in the play of the virtues, you are the soul.
That can't be.
Yes, that's why I knew you when I saw you.
It's impossible.
Why?
You're Hildegard. You're a holy woman. I'm not worthy to be in your vision.
You are, you know. Listen to me. Forget the cramped religion you learned as a child. I have seen beyond it. Everyone's worthy. Everyone. Or put another way, no one is. All our souls are black as pitch. All our souls precious beyond emeralds.
I don't understand. How can they be both?
Only in the fierce hug of God's love. I need you, Sister Richardis. Will you help me?
I would rather not. I'm sorry.
Well, at least the floor is clean.
Let's talk about Cuno. He's the abbot. And unlike the other cleric that we were talking about, he's just kind of striving. He doesn't really care about devotion, doesn't care about God. He's interested in power. Talk about him as a character in the play.
I'm glad to talk about this a little bit, because I didn't write an essay. I wrote a play, and so it's meant to be dialectical. So, for example, if you dislike this idea of Hildegard's theology, there's another character who puts the other theology. And in my head, it's truly dialectical. And Kuno is – his part of the argument is, among other things, religion is a profession for some. And you can do well in the profession or not. You can succeed at your job or not. And succeeding is what's the most important thing for him. So he really wants his monastery of St. Disibod to prosper. And when an idea is fed to him by Hildegard, sort of almost inadvertently, that he could raise the prestige of the monastery by making it the kind of house where people on their way to the Crusades stop, he really seizes that. And he's personally ambitious. It's a job to him. And to what extent you actually believe in all the fervent things in your job that people tell you about, that you're meant to believe, you know, sometimes that actually even just gets in the way of doing the job well.
Yeah.
And he's that kind of guy. He also works for Goldman Sachs. And, he's just trying to make it all work out.
I want to play another moment from the play. Jerry, set this up for us. This is where I think it's a term that people from around here will know, unrighteous dominion.
Yes.
A term from Mormon culture that comes up. Kuno sort of fits into that, I guess.
Well, he's unhappy with the turn that Hildegard's visions have taken. He doesn't feel like he can present this new style of vision in the book that is being prepared for the Pope. He needs an alternative ending, and he is determined to create one and replace what Hildegard has received as what at this time in the play we all think is the final vision for that book. And he's enlisting Volmar's help to do so.
It must bother you, Brother Volmar, seeing your place usurped by that young chit of a girl? It would me. I mean, you were at the hot, sweaty center of the Holy of Holies, and now you're, what, banished to the scriptorium?
I like the scriptorium.
All these old books, old scrolls. I like new things, modern times. We live in an amazing age, in case you hadn't noticed. Look at this. The Cistercians have created a furnace so hot they can make iron from rocks. Can you imagine what that means? As much metal as we want for next to nothing. And our king is taking a remarkable new weapon to the Holy Land. It can fling boulders with so much force they break walls. Well, to be fair, the French invented it. Trebuchet, they call it. Amazing times. But here, just copies of ancient thoughts. Old ideas.
Our Lord lived 1,100 years ago. Has anyone improved on his thoughts?
His thoughts? No, but if the Jews had had abundant iron and a trebuchet, they might have kept the Romans out. He might not have got crucified.
But surely, theologically...
The point is, you used to be part of making new revelations. Now you're consigned to copying old ones, while a girl, guilty of God knows what, is the new darling. Doesn't it make your blood boil?
No.
Liar. You've told me all you want is to keep working beside Prioress Hildegard. In case you haven't noticed, you're not.
He's a creepy guy.
I relate to him. I do. He's just not a rah-rah guy when it comes to spirituality and things like that.
I think the thing that I liked about him, too, was that, as he says in... explicit terms, he doesn't really care what goes on there, as long as he, you know, gets what he wants.
Yeah, I mean, isn't there a part of you? I shouldn't implicate anyone.
He's not terribly pious.
He's not pious,
but
he gets the job done.
Right, exactly.
You know, everybody that's there is materially benefited by him being able to work with deeds and gifts and that sort of thing. Even Volmar, as he points out, who is much more pious, has all the vellum he wants and can get a hold of any manuscript he wants, partly because it's a guy like Kuno that's making the numbers add up.
Yeah.
Well, it's a woman like Hildegard who's also making that possible.
No, that's exactly right. He knows he has a superstar in mm-hmm. the stable, and right. he wants to make sure that continues, because that's really what's putting St. Disibod on the map.
And in a way, they kind of know how to play each other for their benefit.
Yeah.
You know?
An interesting thing that didn't really occur to me when I first read the play is that this predates the separation of men in one house and women in another. Yeah. It was a co-ed existence in many ways, and that changes the dynamic a little bit, because they share a living space. They share everything as far as the communal aspect of daily life, and it's a great equalizer.
You know, Christy, your point about her being very knowing, very strategic as well, mm-hmm. made me think that there's a big distinction. Like, she's not Joan of Arc. She's not this young, impulsive visionary. She's more knowing. Mm-hmm. At least that's my sense of it. Mm-hmm. Don't you think?
I do. And I think her awakening happening when she's in her 40s yeah. is what makes that possible.
Right.
You know, that mm-hmm. she's lived and she's been through a lot and she's seen a lot and she's dealt with this man for a long time. You know, it's interesting, just being an actor in my 40s and working with an actress in her 20s, it's like, wow, you know? Yeah, you do come at things from a place of yeah. knowing, yeah. like Hildegard, and, yeah. and knowing that, look, it's great to be altruistic, and it's great to, you know, have this, you know, and she is altruistic, I think, in a lot of ways. When Cuno says, hey, let's just make up a vision, this is going to help both of us, she says, no.
Yeah.
She says,
I'm not
no.
doing that. Yeah.
I'm not doing that. Yeah. You know, yeah. that's not how it works.
Yeah, because that's not the vision I had.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And she's not willing to play that sort of game.
Exactly.
She is willing to work within what she has to work within. And she's smart enough to do that.
I want to ask you about, Christy, I want to ask you about the moment when this middle-aged woman who's knowing, who's mature, is wondering what she's feeling for this other woman. Because mm-hmm. I want to play this scene when Hildegard is having this conversation with Richardis. And there's this question about, I know this feels right. And we should say, although this doesn't come up in the play, Hildegard has written visions anyway against lesbianism. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden she may be in love. So would you talk about that, just that... the contradiction she feels something. Can that come from God? It can't come from God, or can it come from God? It seems like she's asking herself these questions.
Yeah, it's an awakening for her. And I think, you know, it's been interesting to think about that. Like, what would that be like as a middle-aged woman? I just decided it's no different than a 13-year-old girl feeling it for the first time. You know, your late 30s and early 40s are a very intense sexual time for women. You know, that's yeah. kind of our sexual peak.
Yeah.
So I thought, she's experiencing this for the first time, and maybe that's partly why she can experience it as intensely as she does.
Yeah.
So,
and she's totally vulnerable at that
time. She's totally vulnerable. And I think it's a beautiful experience in the way that Tim has written it. That you get to see this completely other side of her. And she's, I feel like she's being schooled a little bit, like, by the younger woman who has known about her own feelings for a long time.
Yeah.
And she asks her, you know, well, then you're like me. And Hildegard says, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is also
I love
new.
That. I don't know.
I yeah. don't know.
Let's play that moment.
Okay.
Actually, from the play.
That is my confession.
I receive it.
Only my desires are not purged away, as you know. But, Prioress, when I kissed you, forgive me, I felt you respond?
Yes.
Then you are like me?
I don't know.
Have you ever felt this around the other sisters?
They are my daughters.
Am I not also your daughter?
You are Richardis.
And you are a holy woman, so... is it a sin or not?
I have always thought so.
You have?
Yes, I have.
You agree with Hartvig? Oh, my God. Then I have to go, don't I? But where? Who will receive me?
I don't want you to go.
but I have brought evil upon you.
Richardis, the music and words of our play, do you believe they come from the light?
Oh, yes.
And when I receive them and you write them down, do you feel the sweetness of the Holy Spirit?
It fills the room.
If our souls were evil, do you believe we would be permitted to feel that?
I don't know. You must tell me.
God reaching down to touch you, his presence rushing into you like a great river. That's the way you know he approves of you. The only way I know.
And I felt that.
You did.
But my brother showed me my sin from holy writings.
There are lots of holy writings. Do you remember Naomi?
That's the only Bible story I know by heart. She left her home and went to a place far away.
Her two sons married there, but then they died.
When Naomi started back for her own country, one of her son's wives wouldn't leave her side.
She didn't want Naomi to be alone.
And that woman's name was Ruth. Don't tell me to leave you. I entreat you to let me follow you.
For wherever you go, I will go.
Wherever you dwell, I also will dwell
there. My people will be your people.
And your God will be my God.
May God curse me if anything but death part you from me. Do you have your answer from both God and me? We are in his hands, Richardis. I don't pretend to understand. I only know a hollowness I never knew I had is now filled. Be with me.
I love this moment in the play.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways, Tim, don't you think she's sort of answering her own question? She doesn't really know. And then as she's working it out in this moment, she's like, no, this is
yeah, she says, wait a minute. We're experiencing this intense outpouring of God's presence. How can we be evil?
Yeah.
So it's confusing because she did. She has had visions from the light saying this is not right.
Yeah. That's Christy Summerhayes. She plays Hildegard of Bingen in Plan B Theater Company's production of Virtue. Tim Slover wrote the play. Jerry Rapier directs it. The other cast members are Emily Starr as Richardis, Jay Perry as Cuno, and S.A. Rogers as Volmar. The play opened last night. It runs to the 26th. It's sold out, but there's still a chance for tickets. A prepaid waiting list opens 1 hour before each performance at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center box office. You can get details about that on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take another break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now to our conversation about the latest production from the Plan B Theater Company. It's called Virtue. It's Utah playwright Tim Slover's play about the 12th century abbess Hildegard of Bingen. We have with us Tim Slover on the program, also the artistic director of Plan B Theater Company, who directs the production, Jerry Rapier, and Christy Summerhayes, who plays Hildegard. Tim Slover, I wanted to ask you about Volmar. I really feel for him as a character. On one hand, he kind of represents the orthodox view, right? I mean, he's down the line. But there's some kind of love that he feels for Hildegard. I'm not sure what it is. It seems like sexual love in some way. Certainly he also is connected to her vision and her sense of God. I mean, there's that love too. So... but he doesn't think her love for Richardis in that way is right. Talk about him as a character, if you would.
I feel like I dwell in this character also. So in some ways, I am at war with myself on a spiritual level anyway, because I certainly see his point. His point is you, Hildegard, place such a high priority on direct inspiration from God that if that contradicts what you read in authoritative writings, you pick your experience first. Volmar is the guy that doesn't. Now, partly that's because Volmar doesn't have these personal experiences. He's the sort of guy that wants, craves spiritual experiences. Yeah. And I feel this way myself plenty of times.
Loves books.
Loves books, but doesn't get them.
Yep.
And so he he does rely on these. And he finally comes to the conclusion that that's better for him, that actually he has better access to the truth through the authoritative writings, the Holy Fathers, the Scriptures, the commentaries, than this sort of what looks to him like willy-nilly kind of, if you happen to want this, you'll say God says that to you, and even accuses her of that. That's where they fall out, is over that issue.
Right. Well, there's the moment when he says, basically, I'm not hearing from God. God's silence is the thing that has kept me on the straight and narrow. Mm-hmm. I'm not all over the map like you are, Hildegard. I don't hear from God, but I know my marching orders, and I'm gonna go forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yet there's a little more of his journey to go after he reaches that conclusion.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me play another moment. This is Hildegard in Volmar. He's confronting her and saying that this can't be right, that this can't be good, this love. And she talks about how God sends experiences and how change then happens.
He's pretty distraught, and we discover in the scene that his devotion is to her first. And I think that's confusing to him because he's devoted his life to God, but to God through her. So the idea that she might have an intimate relationship with someone else is really blindsides him, and he doesn't. It puts his own faith into a tailspin as well. And the great trump card she has to play is that she can speak directly to God, and he has never experienced that. So how can he judge her from this incomplete experience of his own? It's a very raw moment in the play, maybe the rawest of a series of raw moments, because I think anyone who has ever had any sort of faith-based experience can insert themselves into both sides of this interaction, because you can't have a spiritual awakening without questioning, and we're seeing it play out in front of us.
I know right from wrong.
Do you? You think right and wrong are stones fixed in a wall. They don't move.
Exactly.
I know better now. Right and wrong is a tree growing in a forest from seedling to sapling to mature oak.
Right and wrong don't change.
Yes, they do, because we do. We're flesh and blood, Volmar. You don't like it, but we are. We move and breathe. God sends us experiences, and they change us. And then right and wrong change too.
He sends us experiences to test our faith. If they're evil, we're to withstand them, not wallow in them.
I told you, wherever the light led me, I would follow.
It isn't the light, Hildegard. It can't be. You're deceived.
I thought you stood with me.
How can I? What you're doing with that woman is against Holy Writ.
I love the Bible. I love the words of the Holy Fathers, but I choose my own experience with the light over either of them. I know God is with me.
How do you know?
I know because I know.
That is no answer.
It is the only answer. You don't understand because you've never heard his voice.
No. I have always envied you that.
God has blessed me.
He has blessed me more. I see that now. His silence has led me to the scriptorium and to his laws, which do not change. Never speak to me, Lord, I pray. Your absence keeps me on the path of righteousness.
Amen, if that is truly your wish.
It is. Because your spiritual experiences can't be trusted. They're as likely to come from hell as from heaven.
How dare you?
Why do you hide what you do? Is that not a hallmark of the devil?
We are private out of compassion, so as to not test too sorely those of little faith, which apparently includes you.
And so you desert the path of righteousness for this wicked woman.
And what about you? What about the perfect cleric? I saw you. You came into my room. You pressed your body into my bed. Is this just a stop on your path of righteousness? What is in your hot heart, Volmar?
You... You've always known that. God help me, I've worshipped you. But you had eyes only for Jesus. Or so you said. I thought you were being strong, as I have been. But now I know you were only pretending to wait for the one bridegroom you knew would never come. Don't worry. I'll do penance for lying on your bed.
Oh, Volmar.
Will you give the woman up? No. You answer to no authority. You consult no holy book. You heed only your experience with the light. May it lead you well. It's all you have left.
It's all I need. It's all I need.
But what happens, Tim Slover, when the light goes away? As it does for her for a time. And she does not know what to do about that.
Right. And so the conclusion that she reaches is she was wrong about the whole thing.
Yeah.
She goes back to not an experience-based revelatory way of thinking, but I must be breaking the rules. Because the only way she knows that God is with her is if God is with her. Mm-hmm. And now he's not. And she reaches the conclusion. It takes her a few days. But imagine if you're somebody that is nourished by the Spirit all your life, and then it's gone.
Yeah, you're getting flooded with these visions all the time, yeah. And then they stop.
It's gone. And so you start to draw conclusions. And the conclusion Hildegard draws is it's because of what Bouchardis and I have done.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the lives of many very spiritual, religious figures, there is a time period where they feel forsaken. And this is Hildegard's Why Hast Thou Forsaken Me? It's her first time. And so, like Tim says, she equates it with, well, I kissed a girl, so...
Yeah, the music stopped.
Yeah. So that must be it. And I think that we all want things to make sense like that.
Yeah.
You know, a cause and effect kind of thing. And I personally don't think that that's how God works. Otherwise, there would be no reason for any sort of faith.
Yeah. That's kind of where Hildegard goes, is that she comes back around.
Yeah.
And the visions do come back.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't tell if that's a test from God or if it's a test of her own sense of the world.
Well, she sees it as a test of her faith.
Yeah.
She sees it that way, that she was asked to walk in the dark, and she didn't do that very well. You know, and she actually says, you know, how much she admires Volmar because he just has faith, even though he's been asked to walk in the dark. And I don't know. I love that relationship between those two people because, you know, we deal with different personality types and different levels of spirituality. Different people. Some people, you know, operate through intuition very strongly. Other people are very logical, and to say, look, we can respect each other and gain a lot from each other. Mm. And Volmar and Hildegard in this play are kind of the yin and yang. But yeah, I think we have to learn to get along and respect each other.
Yeah. I'm trying to imagine the audience, people of faith.
Yeah.
Here, let's say Mormon, mm-hmm. and others believers who feel conflicted about same-sex marriage or homosexuality or whatever, and more secular views, people who, you know, think a different way. How are you imagining the way they are going to be encountering this play?
Well, first of all, I'm hoping that they respond to what I think is a cracking good yarn. I can say that without hubris because I don't know how to make up stories. All my stuff is found. So finding this story and just dramatizing and relating it as a supposal, it's a supposal. I hope an audience will say, I want to find out what these very human people, how they end up and what happens to them moment to moment. I'd like to means test audience members as they come in so that we can the play is being brilliantly staged and it's in traverse. So there's audience on one side and on the other side and the action goes on in the middle. And if we could just ask what party they're in and put them on each side, then, you know, they could like throw darts at each other across the way. The only thing I desperately hope is that both sides are interested.
Yeah.
So that if you're a person for whom, you know, religion is anathema, that there's still interest in this story. And I think there is because it's a story about a really strong woman who goes through a really big struggle.
Yeah.
And if you're a person of religious faith, I hope that you are willing to entertain the idea that there's value in both sides of this argument, the argument that says personal revelation and living according to what minute to minute I feel God wants me to do has a place, and also the idea that I believe in a religious tradition and I read the Bible and I read the Book of Mormon and I I also find faith in that. And sometimes those may end up clashing. That's what I think some religious people don't believe. And I just have to say that my experience is that that happens. And this this play is about that.
Yeah. Christy, are you thinking about that? The way different types are going to be?
Oh, yes, because my mother will come. Yeah.
Have you prepared her?
I haven't. She's told me, I've lived life. Don't worry about me.
I can handle it. Yeah.
I can handle it. No, of course I think about that. And I've thought about that for myself. And I've tried to figure out, you know, what do I think about these words that are coming out of my mouth, you know? And I still wrestle with it, and I don't have answers, and I think that that's okay, that it's a process. I do believe that as you go along, things that you thought you knew, you don't know as well as you thought you did. And if you really try to understand where people are coming from, that's more important than making a judgment. And one of the things that I love about Hildegard and the way that Tim has portrayed her is that the center of everything she does is this love and this greenness, you know, that he talks about, this abundance, and which juxtaposed with, you know, medieval religious practices is different, you know.
One's super austere and
just forget that cramped religion you learned as a child. I've seen beyond it, and I think that is a possibility for all of us. To see beyond these you know, rules that we cling to because it's safe, because it's predictable, and she was courageous to step beyond that, or maybe it was given to her, maybe it was a gift.
That's Christy Summerhayes. She plays Hildegard of Bingen in Plan B Theater Company's production of Virtue. Tim Slover wrote the play. Jerry Rapier directs it. The other cast members are Emily Starr as Richardis, Jay Perry as Cuno, and S.A. Rogers as Volmar. The play opened last night. It runs through the 26th. It's sold out, but there's still a chance for tickets. A prepaid waiting list opens 1 hour before each performance at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center box office. I should also mention this Sunday evening at 7 o'clock, St. Mark's Cathedral in Salt Lake City is holding a service focused on the music and the life of Hildegard of Bingen. You can get details on our website, radiowest.org. Radio West is a production of KUER News. The show was directed today by Adrian Moranville. Radio West is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.